Boom.
Podcasts are flying these days, and that's because I've got something to say. Every time I start a podcast, the dog comes. It happened last time. Anyway, this is Golf Nerds with me, Guy Cross. I've got a new little sponsor on the go. I'm going to wrap that up in the next few days. Some very funny t-shirts I've seen, and I bought one and got in touch with the person making them. In fact, the person making them is pretty close to me anyway. And it was a great chat, so deals have been cooked. So that was fantastic. Now, that's not the reason for the podcast. Of course not. Not at all. I was having a great chat earlier today with my old golf coach, Ken Runyon, and good friend. He lives out in Indonesia. And we were talking golf and all sorts of stuff. Ken is famous in amongst golfing circles in Southeast Asia for having an opinion on everything, and especially if there's a conspiracy involved. And so we start talking Bryson. And it was a really good chat. And I had this moment of enlightenment, illumination, one could say, about the future, as I see it, of the PGA Tour. And the distance argument in golf, as I see it, post Bryson. Because give it 3 or 4 years, and the sort of 17, 18, 19 year olds who are just getting into college or now in virtual college or whatever, you know, those guys who are plus handicap golfers, working hard on their game. Well, they're now working even harder in the gym and even harder on their protein and macro ratios, because they've seen the future, and the future's Bryson, and they're going to come out of college and hit the web. Sorry, the what's it called? The Corn Ferry Tour. Huge. And they are going to absolutely destroy the drive, chip and putt tournaments on the web with 370-yard carries, because that's the future. And that's obvious, right? That's not my vision of the future. That's just a statement of what I clearly see will be fact. The average driving distance on the KFC Tour has always been higher than on the PGA Tour, like significantly higher. There's a lot more guys flying the ball 320, 325 on the lower tour than on the larger tour. And there's some solid reasons for that. Mainly age. It's predominantly younger guys. And the other one is the courses those guys play reward bomb and gouge way more. Traditional bomb and gouge, the half-arsed bomb and gouge that we've had for the last 10 years. But they're going to purely reward the future of bomb and gouge that Bryson has brought about. How do we counter this, golf wonders? And I see it as simple. I see it as really simple. And let me go through and destroy, in my own style, the traditional responses. There's two things that are close but flawed. Thing number one, change the equipment. I've come full circle on this. I used to think we should change the equipment to make the game stay within the confines of regular golf clubs and somehow keep the game accessible. Like, so the golf I play is a solid scratch golfer being in the same ballpark, pun intentional, because there is a baseball link here, the same ballpark as the PGA Tour guys. Because, you know, I fly the ball 240, 250 on a regular golf course, even from the tips, and I'm kicking it around in par. But if I was flying the ball an extra 60 yards, if I put in the gym work, sure, I'd probably, you know, knock a few shots off my game. And it's tempting, and I might do it, but I flip. I'm going to think about this for the next month and decide if I'm going to do that. But I don't think changing the equipment is going to change the gap between me and Bryson. And I don't think it should. There should be a gap there. Because pro sport, like the PGA Tour, is an entertainment product. And I've had a vision of how entertaining golf with Bryson DeChambeau could become. And I want to share it with you, and that's what this podcast's about. And I'm going to answer my own question about putting on muscle in my game, and I want to translate that back to your game. Okay? So I don't think we should change gear. I do think the current limits imposed by the regulatory bodies are solid, because we've seen there's a way to push the envelope, which is to make the athlete bigger and stronger. There's no limits on that. Or we're nowhere near the God-given physical limitations of that. Bryson has proved that. And what will happen, just let me follow that thought through, is the gains with an S and a Z that Bryson have made, and the learning process him and his team have been through to have those gains manifest in his golf game, will trickle down. He will have learnt lessons about working out, about the swing, and about equipment that will begin to trickle down, especially as more and more people follow on his path. So we will, in 20 or 30 years, all be hitting the ball further, even if there's a hard limit on tech in golf, which I think there probably should be, because of the gains with an S, in technique and ability that Bryson has unlocked, and gains with the Z, the muscle gains. Okay? That's going to happen. Believe it. So I think there needs to be a hard limit on equipment, but no changes. So essentially, I think all golf tech changes from now on should essentially be cosmetic. And of course, the manufacturers won't spit the dummy, but they will work harder and harder, and there'll be new materials to make things more forgiving. So the ball speed off the face, I think that needs to be an absolute hard limit. But playability, things like that, I'm all for it. Let's push the envelope. But I think there's a few metrics that I'm not fully confident in using, but I know ball speed off the face is measured. And there's another one, which is COR, which I think is also related to ball speed off the face. It's the bounciness of the face. All that sort of thing needs, those limits need to be hard and they need to be enforced. But golf equipment should not change, you know, significantly because of those hard limits. Okay, that's point one. Equipment should not change. Gains to golfers are coming. We don't need to change the gear. Point two, change the golf courses. No. Golf courses do not need to get any longer, because the longer the golf course, the more the power hitter is rewarded. We've learned this now. They tried to tiger-proof golf courses, and all they did was make it easier for him and then them, and now they're going to have to Bryson-proof golf courses. And all they're going to do is make it easier for him. If a par four becomes, you know, up to 600 yard long, because Bryson can hit drive a 7-iron into that, when Matt Fitzpatrick's staring down, you know, drive a 3-wood wedge to make the same hole, par on the same hole, it's just not fair. Golf courses do not need to change. I think it's quite simple. But something about golf courses, and specifically the golf courses chosen by the PGA, European, and all the other tours, needs to change. Because golf is going to get boring for a variety of reasons. First reason, we're going to start seeing the same tracks over and over again. And then, of course, new tracks will be built, but they're within regular constraints of par and par 72. You know, golf will get boring. And golf is an entertainment product. So how do we, because we are golf, how do we keep golf interesting? Do we need to build more par 72 resort courses in the Caribbean? No. There's nothing wrong with them. They're great places. I love seeing tournaments there. But no. Do we need more super swanky links style courses like Bandon? No. No. There's one Bandon and there's, you know, Sand Valley and all those other courses and Piney, there's a few of them, right? They've all got names. And they're great. And it'd be awesome to see a couple of tour events there. And there's an organic growth to golf courses, high quality golf courses. Like, is it Payne's Valley that Tiger just opened? That looks amazing. Crenshaw and his mate, they're building some great tracks. As bad tracks close, good tracks are opening. Fine. And some of them will, of course, make it into the PGA Tour roster. But I've got an idea to make it even more exciting, and it solves the Bryson problem. So let's go. Let me drop it on you. You remember me talking about my excitement for Bryson playing Augusta? And it was based around how pissed off the Green Jackets would be if Bryson drops one on the front edge of 18. Interesting idea, right? If he can chop a high cut around all the bunkers and the trees with his 48-inch driver, he might bop one on that front right edge. That would be magnificent for golf, just because of how upset they'd be. But then take the idea a step further. What if we sacrifice par? Okay? Because especially at the PGA Tour level, par is irrelevant. Okay? Doesn't matter. It's a really handy metric of a way of, counting score. And so it's not irrelevant in that sense. It's really useful to have each hole has a par. And so at the end of 18, Bryson can say, yeah, I'm 16 under. But just for that, because otherwise we get to a point of saying, oh, I shot, 79. And that's okay after 18. But then through, 23 holes to say, oh, Bryson's on, 156 through 23. You were like, is that good? Is that bad? Let me get my pencil out. Is pars useful in that instance? Say he's 3 under through 18. That's useful. Par has a function. But for the original purpose of par, to level the playing field in golf, at the PGA Tour level, par is irrelevant. If someone wins a tournament 1 under, 20 under, or 40 under, it doesn't matter. Okay? Because we just want to be entertained by the games. Let's be honest. Those of us who listen to this podcast, I'd say 50% of you, really love seeing a guy post 30 under for 72 holes. No one's done 40 under, right? Wouldn't that be cool, though? Birdies, 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 eagles. It's what people want to watch. How do we do that, though? Do we build easier golf courses? No, we don't have to. They already exist. Because in tiger-proofing golf courses, what has happened is some tracks have fallen off the roster. So there's golf courses around the world that are perfectly capable of hosting a PGA, European or World Tour golf tournament, but they don't because they're too short / too easy. They've got the rest of the facilities, and most of them, lots of them still do, because, you know, what you needed to host an event in the 80s is pretty much what you need to host an event now. You with me? With the growth and decline and growth and decline of golf, with changes in how an event's hosted, a creative event director can use the turf on the property he's got to host an event in a creative and effective way. If he's got lots of turf, he can throw an event like the Waste Management. We turn it into a stadium, a party, we all have a rave. Awesome. If he's got smaller property, that's fine. He creates an event with that smaller event vibe, a little more exclusive. Let's get Lexus sponsoring it. You know, we're not all, you know, chugging Colt cheap lager. We're all sipping on champagne in dark green pavilions around the 18th. It's the same vibe. Folks are going to watch golf to get drunk and stuff. But it's just, let's be honest, it's richer folk. Smaller property, more exclusive event. Hey, the TV's still good, right? These courses already exist. Well, Guy, you say, and rightly so, you should be thinking these questions. If it's that simple, why aren't people already doing it? And I've got a simple three-letter answer for that question, and it is par. The regulatory bodies of golf and the governing bodies of each tour are obsessed with par. They think they can't host an event at a course where a guy's going to shoot 54. Because they don't understand that golf is an entertainment product. Imagine a track. Okay? We're going to call it the old course. Okay? And there's been questions about the old course and fairness, and they bake it out and keep it super dry for the Open so it holds par. Imagine a golf event at the old course in August, but they keep the course green. Or even they just keep the greens a little longer and a bit more playable. So they haven't got the problem of a bit of wind and the ball starts rolling and they've got to cancel a few days. They keep the course green. Having lived in Fife, right next to St. Andrews, I can tell you if they host a golf event around August, the greens will be softer because it rains in August in the UK. It'd be very unusual to have a super dry August in Fife. August is actually quite famous, or it was when I lived there, for being a bit of a flood season. There's lots of little localized floodings. As I'm aware, it doesn't affect the town, city of St. Andrews in a big way. You could host an event there. It doesn't affect the golf course. I can't remember regular instances of the old course being flooded. Towns and villages surrounding it, yes, but, you know, perfectly avoidable. Imagine that track. In August, it's green. Okay? You've got Tyler McCumber, Bryson, Cameron Champ, all the new breed of big hitters who are now bigger hitters. Even Bruce Koepka, who's put some serious time in the gym now. Imagine they go there and they rip the heart out of it. Bryson, day one, lips out for a 58 on 18. He's angry because he feels like he's not had a good day because he's missed a ton of putts. Imagine Bryson, say 18's playing about 305, 307 to the stick. Imagine he's got a 3-wood. He's put a slightly softer shaft in it specifically so he can fly his 3-wood 300, but it lands soft and stops dead. And he just hits a super safe 3-wood to the middle of the green and lips out from 10 feet for a 58. And it's just a standard PGA Tour round of golf. Think of one, which I think plays 315, 313 to the middle of the green. Imagine that tee shot. Again, some young buck with long hair in a hoodie cranks a one iron to a foot on the first at St. Andrews because the green's soft and receptive. They've stopped worrying about par. Imagine, like, you've got a road that lines the right-hand side of that. Fans lining that. Some kid from UCLA, first time in Scotland, spanks a 2-iron to an inch on the first at St. Andrews. Big salute to the crowd. He goes, "Fuck yeah! America!" I'd love it. It would be amazing. It would be great TV. It truly would be. Imagine, though, that head-to-head. Imagine the narrative you create. Because, okay, so you've got to be able to fly a fairway club 300 to compete at that level. But you don't have to play the game that way. So you could have, like, another golfer who we're going to call Lee Westwood Jr., who's long enough, like he competes, but he just chooses to play the game in a slightly more traditional way. So he hits 3-wood way up to the water, leaving himself a simple pitch. And his game plan is to walk off with a tap-in birdie. And he's just going to play that all the way around. That's his game plan all the way around the course. Tap-in birdie, tap-in birdie. And he's going to grind down all these big hitters. They're all trying to get eagle and they're taking that risk-reward advantage. And he's just going to tap in birdie their ass out of that tournament. It's real, right? That could happen. That picture I've painted for you is not a million miles off. What could happen in 20 years if the RNA and the surrounding tour officials chose to make that happen? That would be amazing. I would watch that. I would love to watch that. Imagine, and I have to commit from a British perspective because I truly only know those British golf courses. Imagine somewhere like Sunningdale. Now, I don't know the holes very well there. But imagine them. Going to a track like that, making it super VIP, you've got celebs, you've got presidents watching, an elder statesman of golf, Bryson DeChambeau, you know, still bouncing balls off things 360 yards away, hitting par fours in one. But it's not frowned upon. They just embrace it as good golf because no one gives a flying flip about par anymore. We've now reopened this wealth of old, beautiful golf courses. We've brought money back into the game because those clubs that right now, yet they're doing okay. I was thinking of Woburn. You know, they're doing okay, but they're never going to have that glory if we go down the 7,000, 8,000 yard course is what you need. So eventually the corporate days and senior pro tournaments are going to dry up. And so is their golf club. Not in a bad way. It's not like Woburn's ever going to close. It'll still be a great members club, but it won't be anymore. It will always look back at its heyday. All because of a three-letter word that's going to ruin them, par. If they forget about par, the future's in front of them. Because Woburn's hold great tournaments, Sunningdale, you know, hundreds of tournaments. Think of the courses in Scotland. Instead of trying to protect par, they just forgot about it. And say, let's set up the golf course to be as easy as possible and see what these guys can do. It will be amazing to watch. Think about that, the Irish courses. Imagine it. But then, dear listener, it's not just about reopening courses, is it? Now what we can do is we can give Captain Crenshaw, Mr. McClay Kidd, I forget how to say his name, let's be honest. We can give those guys smaller patches of land in cities, in areas, not in the middle of nowhere, to build tournament level golf courses because we don't care about par anymore. Are you with me? And I can go around those courses. Let's say they're 6,008, 6,006, 6,005. I can go around those courses and play them from the tips and have fun. Yet par still on the card. It's a wonderful tradition of golf. I wouldn't really want to get rid of it. I just want to forget about how important it is. Handicap system golf is wonderful for the amateur. It truly is. But it means nothing to the pro. You know, I get texts from old students and things like that asking me what I think about the new world handicap system. I don't know anything about it because I'm not actively coaching and I'm not involved in a club. I play golf with my buddies and we play scratch golf. So I've no idea. Dear, anything about handicaps. Not that I only play golf with good players, I've talked about that before, but we don't care about your rules. We're just out playing golf. If the guy I play golf with, who shoots 90 to 100, gets really good next week and starts shooting 60 to 70, we're still not going to care about your rules. He's just going to have to start giving me some shots. Because that's fine. That's how friends play golf together. That's why the handicap system is wonderful. But the rules about it and what it means to a pro, I'm not interested. Go and ask Rory McIlroy about the intricacies of the new handicap system. I guarantee you he'll start laughing because he won't know about it. Because it means nothing to us guys. And like if par was something complicated, we wouldn't know anything about that either. Fortunately, par's easy, so we do know about it. I have yet to really give the time to reading up on the slope system, and I can't really imagine a world where I want to do that, so I never will. It doesn't impact me. I don't care about it. Because I'm in the world of the group of golfers who turn up at a club, pay their money, play golf and leave. I just happen to be a lot better at golf than most of the guys that do that. Like, I care about my game. Oh, it's starting to rain. I don't know if you can hear that around me. It's beautiful. I love it. Are you with me? Do you understand the details here? If we forget about par, we can open up a world of old golf courses and enjoy them and as an entertainment experience by having them as tour courses. And more excitingly, it opens up the future of not needing these massive patches of turf, so we can have some big, long golf courses without the 3-hour out-of-town drive for them. We could have, you know, think of your city. Lots of big cities have city centre golf courses. Now, I live, you know, 1 kilometre, 2 kilometres from a course that's hosted qualifying events for PGA LATAM and KFC Tour events. And it's a 20-minute drive from a city centre, from Panama City Centre. The regular tour would destroy it. I'm not sure it would be a sub-60 for 4 rounds type of place. But I guarantee you someone would shoot 60, 61 there if there was a PGA Tour event. Oh, the rain's gotten big. It's probably the good Lord telling me to call this one a day. We're just over half an hour now. I think I've said everything I need to say, but I did promise you one tip for your game, and I will give you that. So, imagine my world where these shorter golf courses find their place. That's great for me. It truly is. Because what it does is it empowers me not to constantly seek distance in my game. It does empower me to do that. Because at my level of golf, I will remain competitive simply by hitting the ball straighter and being able to hit more and more different type of shots. Because that's what shorter golf courses reward. Sure, if I could land the ball on a green 300 yards away, I wouldn't need to think about too much about what shape of golf shot I hit or what trajectory I hit. You know, I'm pushing my analogy a little, but bear with me. And I wouldn't have to think too much about how straight it went, because if I was 20 yards off a green, for you know, I just chip and putt. But you know, if I'm flying the ball 240, I still need to think about my second shot, so I have to think about that. And if I don't get my first shot perfect, I need to think about this, you know, the shape and trajectory of my second shot. And obviously, at a tough golf course, I may hit a beautiful drive and still need to put some work on my second shot. So I've given you two things there to learn on. One, don't kill yourself for distance. Just don't. Become really good at what you're good at until you can't get any better. If your guys you play with or girls say you're the best putter in the group, become even better. If you're the guy who hits the ball the straightest and finds the most fairways, don't relax because you're always on the short grass. Make sure you're on the right side of the short grass. And to do that, you're going to have to make sure you can hit draw and a fade and a high shot and a low shot, so you're always finding the right part of the fairway and then the green. If you are the longest guy in your group, become even longer. Hit the ball harder and further. Get good at that. I'm not against the long ball. I'm just jealous of you. Because it's not me and it's not how I play. And we always want what we can't have. But here's my simplified advice to wrap that up. Get even better at what you're good at and get better at what you're bad at. So for me, I gain and I save shots by hitting fairways and hitting greens. Okay, that's my strength. I hit fairways, I hit greens. And I can do that after a bad drive. I can cook up a shot and get myself on the green. When I'm playing well, that's what I'm really good at. You know, if I'm having a good driving day, obviously I'm just hitting nice drives and leaving myself lazy approach shots. But my skill is I can still put something on that approach shots to get to the right part of the green or get close to the flag. But if I'm having a bad driving day but still playing well, I can. I'm not saying I'm hitting savvy shots, but, you know, from the wrong side of the fairway, I can still hit a big hook or sometimes even a big fade to get to the green or even better, get to the right part of the green. And I guess by extension of that, what I'm good at is being able to see where the right place is on a hole. And what costs me the most shots is my putting. I think if you're a short hitter, your putting needs to be good. Now, I've got a lot of work in front of me before my putting is great. But hopefully I'm getting to the point where my putting is not a weakness. I told you I played last week with these guys. And I was not having the worst putting day out of the group of four pros I was with. That's good, right? That's good. I'm not saying I was having a great putting day because I wasn't having a great putting day. But on my average day, if I'm average, especially amongst other really good players, and I mean really good compared to the rest of golf, I'm doing all right. And that's my target. So, what's that for you? What is that for you and your game? How am I going to get... So I'm going to bring it back to me to help you think. How am I going to get straighter? Well, I'm going to go back to some old school ball striking drills. Okay? One of my favourites is trying to hit all the shots with your feet together. So you develop the feel in your fingers and hands. Okay? Now, of course, you have to practice with your legs back in a normal stance so you don't screw your swing up. But this is a good old school drill. Something else I've discovered is staying flexible. Staying flexible really helps my ball striking. It gives me an edge on distance, but like not masses. It's not going to make me longer. But what it does is it makes me flexible enough to hit my best shots. So I'm not, you know, sometimes if I've not stretched out or I just haven't played for a while or something, but I'm still, you know, I'm still in practice, I'll find like I play a whole round with a three-quarter swing just because I'm not quite feeling it. But that's not my best golf and it's not my best ball striking. So that's how I, you know, keep practicing my ball striking and stay flexible and stay in some sort of shape. I play better golf when I'm skinny by comparison to when I'm fat. I'm not actually skinny, but if I stay, I use the BMI as a guide and I've got to stay in the green on my BMI and I'm good. So still running, still doing a little bit of physical exercise. But I'm gonna back off that because I'm not chasing the strength. Just going to do some push-ups every day and do some leg muscle exercises every day. I know I run, but it doesn't work your leg muscles in quite the right way. You know, it just doesn't, basically. It just doesn't. And of course, I enjoy my running. So doing a little bit of stretchy body weight workout is going to help me avoid injury in running and in golf. And I think you guys should do the same. And if you've listened all the way to this podcast and you'd like me to help you out with your game, drop me a line. Drop me a line. gc@impactgolf.net. Email me. I'd love to help you out. Might even get you on the podcast. Let's do it. Until next time, folks. Ciao.